And now, with Sound Investing, here's Paul Merriman.
I know you can make a better decision today than you would have made 50 years ago in the investment process. You would be able, if you're a mutual fund investor, you'd be able to not only identify the better performing funds, you'd be able to identify the levels of risk of different mutual funds, the level of diversification, the expenses, their turnover, the asset class. You'd be able to study and determine from everything we've mostly learned out of the academic community with information from a source of like a Morningstar, where you can compare mutual funds performance and important financial characteristics. And that helps us do better. That helps us, I think, build, not only make better decisions, but make decisions that will give us a sense of trust that will help us maintain the investment strategy for a lifetime. And there are people today, literally, they know enough now and they can see enough information to put money into a target date fund that they could invest in when they're in their 20s, and they could still be in that target date fund when they're 80. But that trust, I think, is built out of education and the ability to take a good, honest look at what each of these financial products has to offer, how it's done in the past, how it's constructed, and then the conclusion, what's the best decision to make for the future? Information, education, performance, comparisons of performance amongst competing products. Today, we have Morningstar, and that helps us do that work within the mutual fund industry, all of that comparing and contrasting. Now, there's a huge business of selling people information, and that information is, in my industry, that information is showing you, telling you how to invest your money. I do that through my website. I try to get people to put together a portfolio of mutual funds at Vanguard or Fidelity or T. Rowe Price, depending on where they have their money. Do it with mutual funds. Do it with ETFs. I'm trying to get you to do the right thing for your financial future. I am just one of thousands of tens of thousands of sources. In fact, hundreds of thousands, if you take into consideration that every individual stockbroker or every individual investment advisor is trying their best to convince you that follow me, I will show you the way. And we can at least compare the results of mutual funds. It isn't so easy to compare the results of individual brokers. That's really too bad, because it seems to me that if you can see the results of a broker that has been terrible, like you can see the results of a mutual fund that's been terrible, you wouldn't put your money into a mutual fund with a bad track record. But millions of people put money into under the guidance of stockbrokers who have terrible track records. And not only are they not particularly that smart, but they use products that are not in your best interest. And then along comes a newsletter. Somebody who's not going to make a lot of money off me. They're going to, for $99 a year or $499 a year, they're going to tell me where to put my money. I'm not going to have to pay somebody 1% of my portfolio for the rest of my life, when for a few hundred bucks, I can find out all I need to know and I can invest on my own. And that would be, I guess, okay if you had a way to sift through all of the different newsletters to figure out who had the best track record. Now, newsletter writers are a very slippery bunch as a group. There are a handful I think very highly of, and I think they do give recommendations that are worth following. But lots of them, because they're protected by the First Amendment, they have the free speech protection. And they don't have to deal with the regulations and restrictions of the SEC. They're free to say and kind of do whatever they wish in order to attract you as a possible subscriber. And while the small amount of money that you may spend for those newsletters may not change your life, the result could change your life of all the savings that you have that you're applying those newsletter recommendations to. That certainly, if the recommendations aren't worthy of you, that's a whole different consideration. All of a sudden, the cost of a newsletter could go from pennies to thousands. In fact, I would say in many cases, the difference between good advice and bad advice, and this would be true in the mutual fund industry as well, could be millions over your lifetime. Now, at least with the mutual fund industry, we have Morningstar to track those results. And if we get an education and learn how to compare those results with mutual funds, I think we can do better. Again, as I said, we don't have any way to track how individual brokers do. They don't have a track record. But the newsletters have a track record. And sometimes the track record is absolutely amazing. What? Newsletters know how to make, in some cases, 20, 30% a year. And in fact, if you do what they say, it should change your life. It should make you rich. In fact, if you really believed what some newsletter writers claim, you ought to be able to turn $10,000 into $1 billion before you die. Now, the problem with newsletters, as I say, is they don't have to tell the truth. But along in about 1980-81 comes a fellow who decides to dedicate himself to finding the truth of newsletters, how they really did. Because there are newsletters not around today that claim they took their guidance from God. I mean, literally, from God. So that you had the ability, if somebody would do this, as Mark Hulbert set out to do, to see how good God was. I'm not being sacrilegious. I'm saying that there are, I mean, literally, people who claimed that their motivation, their ideas, their recommendations came from God. And therefore, you should trust them and spend that few hundred dollars, which, by the way, if you can get a million people to give you a few hundred dollars, that's not a bad living. And there are newsletter writers who have sales of revenues of 10 to 20 million and more. And it's fascinating because they don't even have to have a good track record to make that kind of money. In the mutual fund industry, you would die. Your business would be over if you had the kind of track record that people claim they have through their newsletters, if in fact the truth came out. See, with mutual funds and being registered with the SEC, they actually, by law, have to report in a very specific way how their recommendations did. Now, that isn't true with newsletters, but Mark Hulbert set out to do that tracking. And Mark Hulbert, earlier this year, his publication, now recently owned by the Wall Street Journal and MarketWatch, has been closed. He's still writing, at MarketWatch, but his tracking of newsletters is no longer available. And I just shudder at the stories that will go unchallenged within the industry, and people will be bilked out of their money. Again, oh, it's only a few hundred dollars a year. But if the address, if the recommendations are causing you to make 2, 3, 4, 5% less per year, it's costing you more than a few hundred dollars. So Mark's publication is gone, and I truly am sad, because newsletters are the source of the information for a lot of investors. They just don't want to pay a professional manager. They think they can do this all themselves. They've just got to find somebody who they can trust to show them how to do it. So let me tell you what I learned from Mark Hulbert and his work. And I learned it because twice a year, Mark would put out the long-term results. He'd update the long-term results for all the newsletters he tracked. In these newsletters, each one, some would only have one portfolio. Many, like my own, have many portfolios for conservative, moderate, aggressive investors, investors at Fidelity, at Vanguard, investors in mutual funds and ETFs. So he tracked all of my portfolios. He tracked the individual portfolios of newsletters who only had one way to invest. But he tracked well over 200 different portfolios. And he did exactly what the newsletters said to do. He even paid the money to subscribe to all these newsletters so that he would get the same result in his computer. I mean, he didn't invest the money himself. He didn't have the money to invest efficiently in all the newsletter recommendations. But he could do that in a computer. And he did. And those results that came out every 6 months compared all of these newsletters that he tracked. And he broke them down in a number of different ways so that you had at least some ability to compare. Not as efficient as the comparisons that you can make at Morningstar. That is a very large organization that provides that data. But Mark was basically probably a 2 or 3 person organization doing the best that he could, giving you what the two bottom lines that were probably important. One, how much did the newsletter make following their advice? And two, how volatile, how risky was that newsletter? Now, some of those newsletters that had similar risks, they might be in the low risk or average risk or high or very high risk categories. All of those newsletters could have very different strategies. One may be a portfolio of individual dividend paying stocks. Another might be in a portfolio of mutual funds that were a combination of stock funds and bond funds, or all bond funds, or all stock funds. In some cases, all stocks focused in the medical industry or in technology. He didn't break them out into all those little subgroups, but what he did that made it easy to compare is tell you how volatile they were and tell you what their returns were. Now, we know what to expect. We know that, in theory, if these newsletter advisors were doing their work, the conservative ones would make a lower return with lower volatility than those that were more aggressive. And you certainly would not want to put money into a newsletter that took huge risk and produced low returns. Wouldn't make any sense. But people do. The people do because they really don't know how to analyze the newsletters as Mark Hulbert did. So I took his last annual report. Came out after the first of the year before he closed down. And I went through every portfolio. I looked at the return and I looked at the risk. I also looked at the different kinds of newsletters. Some newsletters were focused on market timing. Some of the portfolios were focused just on Vanguard. And that's kind of interesting because a lot of you are Vanguard investors and may want to know, how could I do better at Vanguard? Some of the newsletters used one newsletter, very famous newsletter, uses options. Some of them go short. Some of them use leverage. But you would expect to have some relationship between the risk and the return. So what did I find out about risk and return? Well, it was interesting because the most risky newsletter portfolios produced the worst returns. Now, to be fair, when I look at all of those newsletter portfolios that were given a very high risk rating, some of them did well. Some of them did terrible. The one option newsletter that's been around since the early 80s, over the last 15 years, and that's what the last newsletter that I got from Mark that allowed me to compare these, the longest term I could look at was 15 years, but the option newsletter has a negative 20% a year return for the last 15 years. And what's fascinating is the following that newsletter has. I used to speak at these money shows around the country many years ago, and Bernie would be there. I don't know, by the way, that Bernie is still alive. Maybe somebody else is running the newsletter now, but I'm assuming Bernie's probably still out there doing his thing. One of the best speakers, most enjoyable, most interesting, most motivating, at the end of his 45 or 50-minute presentation, he just is surrounded by people wanting to ask him for a little piece of information because they can just tell that Bernie knows what he's doing. And they buy his newsletter. Now, I suspect they didn't check to see what Hulbert had to say about his track record, but it's terrible. And it's very, very high risk. And what is interesting is with some newsletters, you would be able to see, Louis Navalier. Louis Navalier has portfolios that are pretty risky because they're all stock portfolios. And he has one that has made between 7 and 8% over that 15-year period, and another one that made zero. Now, I know which one you'd be attracted to. On the other hand, would you have had a clue that one was going to be that much more productive than the other? I mean, he's a smart guy. Louis Navalier is another guy that when he speaks at these conferences, people just flock to him because he makes so much sense. So I found out that the higher the risk you take, the more likely you are to underperform the market, and the more likely you are to lose money. And when you do lose money, the larger the losses are likely to be. Now, with the very high-risk portfolio, the compound rate of return, I'm sorry, this isn't just high-risk, this is the very high-risk portfolio. The compound rate of return on average was 4.1% compared to the Wilshire 5000 index, basically the total market index, compound rate of return of 5.6%. So you made 1.5% less on average at 1.5 to 3 times the risk of the Wilshire 5000 index. And we also know that out of the 45 very high risk portfolios, 8 of them lost money, and the average loss was 7.9%. Now, that's a compounded 15-year rate of return. So that is an eye-opener. And it turns out that if you were in, instead of very high risk, if you were in high risk, you had 5 losing portfolios with average losses of 3.3 as compared to the 7.9, and the average compound rate of return was 5.4%, just a little less than the Wilshire. Now, I've got to be sure that I mention this. I don't want to forget this. In the case of the Wilshire 5000, you did nothing for 15 years, but either go up and down with the market. You didn't have to trade. There were no taxes. There were no commissions. Nothing. And so you did something, hard work, moving in and out of the market, having to make the transaction, record the transaction, report it to the IRS. Now, all those things that take time and often cause emotions that drive investors nuts, particularly when things aren't going well. So you had lots of work to do. You took higher risk than the market, and you ended up with lower returns on average. So, and by the way, it turns out that if you look just at the average risk, which is about the risk of the market itself, the average risk portfolios made 6%. Only 2 of them lost money, and the losses were averaged 0.5%. But 23 of those 59 average risk portfolios made less than the Wilshire 5000. So, an important lesson. Every piece of information that I have gotten from Holbert in tracking these newsletters would lead me to believe that you would be better off in index funds. Now, just as some of these portfolios made more money than the market did, some indexes make more money than the Wilshire 5000. Certainly, you would have made more money over that 15 years in emerging market funds or in small cap value, either U.S. or international. There are going to be ranges of returns for ranges of risk. The thing is that the range of risk, higher risk, tended to lead to, in every case, higher returns with the index funds. There was, in fact, about with the very high risk. In fact, overall, looking at all of these portfolios, great lesson. 1 out of 7 of the portfolios made less than T-bills did. T-bills made 1.8%. 1 out of 7, and those are not great returns. To think that you could do all the work, take all the risk, keep track of all the trades, and end up making less than you would have simply putting your money at no risk in a T-bill. Other lessons that I learned from ferreting out from all of these portfolios what we should know about mutual fund, or not just mutual fund, but really all of the newsletters. Here's maybe one of the most important lessons for me. Now, I come with a bias. I'm biased to index funds. I'm biased to buy and hold. I'm biased to keeping it simple. I'm biased to keeping it low cost. I'm biased to low turnover, which is just another cost. I'm biased to massive diversification. All of that leads to indexing. Now, everybody knows that when it comes to the mutual fund family for indexes, you're probably going to think Vanguard. And the good news is that there were 12 Vanguard portfolios that were either all equities or some combination of equities and fixed income. And those 12 portfolios came out of my newsletter. I had three of them. Money Letter, they have three Vanguard, a conservative, moderate, and what they call venturesome. Mine's conservative, moderate, and aggressive. And then there's the independent advisor for Vanguard investors. They have conservative growth. They have growth. They have another one for growth index. And then there is sound mind investing. Now, a lot of my work was done under sound investing over the years, the radio show and podcast. But this is sound mind investing. Some really fine people. And for people who are interested in a newsletter that combines the principles of Christianity along with Vanguard, then Sound Mind Investing is a newsletter. That's what they do. They are Christian-based, and they're buy and hold mostly. They do some work that could be called market timing, but forget about all that. Just look at their just the basics portfolios that are Vanguard funds. Here's what's fascinating. Here are four advisors or their teams, whatever the case might be, who believe in indexing, who believe in diversification, not just within one index, but a number of different indexes. We each take our own approach to how we build a portfolio. And instead of having returns that are all over the map with some breaking even or losing money, every portfolio made money. That's good news. Number two, the range of portfolios returns went from 4.5 to 6.9. 4.5 to 6.9. The average was 6.1. Only one of those portfolios made less than the Wilshire 5000. Even though they may have been built with international and U.S. and large and small and value and growth and REITs, emerging markets, with all of the different things they did, they still all came in at a very similar return. There is one advantage that my portfolios have, and it's not huge. It's not huge. But mine is free. And some of these cost under $100. You can almost always get the independent advisor for Vanguard investors on a special at, I think, $99. Not sure what Sound Mind Investing is, but I think it's $79. I like free, but along with their recommendations, they also have interesting articles that might help you stay the course. That's important. But there is no other approach to investing that is so, seems to be kind of so restricted to reasonable rates of return for reasonable rates of risk. Now, there's some of that with Fidelity funds. But those portfolios are going to tend to make a little less than Vanguard because the expenses are higher. And they have not been as supportive of indexing as Vanguard is. There are plenty of indexes now at Fidelity, but going back over the last 15 years, you could get better exposure at Vanguard. Today, you can get about the same at Vanguard, at Fidelity, as you do at Vanguard. But I find that to be a huge lesson. If what you're looking for is possibly better than market-like returns because of exposure to other indexes, like small cap value, which I've written about and talked about extensively, there are reasons why these portfolios will likely do better than just the market index, but you know, not by a lot. But let's not forget, anytime we hear that somebody makes 5.6 and somebody else makes 6.1, and they both, in fact, the 6.1 took less risk than the 5.6. That 0.5%, as we know, is magic over a lifetime, and even to a retiree. Now, another lesson that I picked up from looking at all these results is that it just doesn't seem to matter how smart the research people are in terms of picking stocks or picking actively mutual funds. It just doesn't seem to make a huge difference. And this really is a myth I've talked about for 30 years, and that myth is that if you're smart, you will make more money in the market. You'll be able to analyze companies' balance sheets and P&L statements and their products and their competitors. And with all of that brain power applied, you would make a lot more money. Well, it turns out there isn't evidence that that's the case. In fact, the research, as many of you know, indicate that just owning the indexes is probably going to be more productive than trying to pick the hot hand or the smart guy or gal to manage your money. Value Line, been around since the 30s, I believe, is when the company itself started. And then they started, I don't remember the exact date, but they've been around for decades. Giving advice on which stocks to buy. And they have so many different portfolios that Hulbert has been tracking for over 15 years. I mean, let's combine all of this knowledge with these great titles for their portfolios. Here's a portfolio called Stocks for Above Average Growth, Stocks for Long-Term Growth, Stocks with Above Average Dividend Yields. Here's another one. Top 100 Timely Stocks. Here's 20 stocks priced from $5 to $15. Well, that one's not been around for 15 years, so I can't tell you how it's done. But don't you just love the name of that portfolio? Doesn't that suggest big money to be made? Here's another one. Stocks ranked number one for performance. Here's another, highest ranked general equity, highest ranked international equity, highest ranked partial equity, it's a balanced fund, highest ranked special equity. Here's aggressive portfolio, conservative portfolio. I mean, when you read these names, you'd really get the sense that all that firepower, all the money they're spending for research analysts and these great names, what would you expect from a portfolio that over the last 15 years had the highest ranked international equity stocks? I don't think you would have expected a 1.4% compound rate of return. Now, stocks ranked number one for performance. Now, remember, they're always looking backwards, but when you then see how the stocks that were highest ranked for performance did 2.7% compound rate of return. Let's take a look. There was one I thought was a platinum portfolio. Oh, maybe that's S&P. Let's look at the return of, hang with me here for a second, above average growth. Well, by golly, they got 4.3%. All I'm saying is that when you buy a newsletter that recommends individual stocks, there absolutely is not any evidence that there is a high probability that you're going to get that big hit that was implied in the sales material that you receive. Now, let me make this very clear. I have not looked at how much the Outlook, which is the newsletter put out by Standard & Poor's, nor, by the way, do I know the cost of the Value Line services, but I can almost guarantee you that Value Line did just fine on those services, and I'm sure that S&P has as well. But look at these returns, 15-year returns from the people who brought us the Standard & Poor's 500 index. And a lot of other indexes. But let's see how they did. How did they do on their stock appreciation ranking system? These are the stocks that got 5 stars. Halbert tracked them. They compounded at 3% a year. There's the S&P's Platinum portfolio. 15 years, compound 2.8. There's the high-quality capital appreciation portfolio, 1.5. There's the small mid-cap growth portfolio, 3.9. Those are the ones that have been around. And the average of all of their portfolios during that 15 years was 3.6. I'm just saying, I can't find the evidence that would lead me to believe that because smart people are working hard, I mean, don't you think that they would like to have 2 or 3 times those returns? Because if they did, they would make a fortune because more people would buy their newsletter. All right, what else have I learned? Well, I've learned without any question that when you try to short the market, the probabilities are you are not going to add any return, and you are not going to reduce the risk. Let me tell you why I mentioned that. Holbert tracked a lot of newsletters and their performance that when they would say to get out, when they got out, they would go to cash, money market. Or when they got out, they go short. Because the reason they're getting you out is because they think the market's going down. And if the market's going down and you short the market, as a matter of fact, you can even do more than just short the market. You can leverage your short position to either make or lose money twice as fast. But the process of shorting the market is a way of making money when the market goes down. So how did the newsletters do when you included the short side versus those that just went to cash? Now, here's what I do know. I do know that those that went to cash had lower volatility. Now, they weren't always in cash. They were only in cash when they thought the market was going to go down further. And when you do that, and let's say you spend 30% of your life in cash, the other 70% you're bouncing around in the market, then you're going to be less risky than somebody who's bouncing around in the market all the time. And the person who gets out of the market and goes short the market, they're still bouncing. They're just bouncing the opposite of what the market is doing. If the market goes up 1%, they go down 1%, approximately. If the market goes down 1%, they go up 1%, but they're bouncing. So in every case, by adding the short side instead of just going to cash, they kept the volatility higher. So What happened to the return? I mean, if these people were smart enough to convince you that they could make money on the downside, you had to assume you're going to make more money than just staying in the stock market. Forget about going to cash, just staying in the stock market and riding that sucker out. Well, it turns out that adding the short side in almost every case created substantially different returns. In some cases, the return difference was huge. A lot of you may know about the Elliott Wave theory, and it's a way of market timing, doing what I consider to be a kind of an artistic touch to knowing when to be in and out of the market. Now, it may be all science to the people who apply the Elliott Wave theory to their decisions, but I can listen to the advice of two different Elliott Wave theorists, and their advice is very different. So I have to conclude it's not mechanical like trend following market timing is. But here's the result of the Elliott Wave financial forecast. And what Hulbert did was to track what you would have made if you had been in the market when the Elliott Wave forecast had you predicting a bull market, and then they would just go to cash when they said to get out. And it turned out, by golly, not a bad return, 6.9% compound rate of return over the 15 years. Now, you would have had a lot of trades over that period of time, but the result would have been fairly good. If at the same time, instead of going to cash, you went short the market, the compound rate of return was a negative 15% a year. And you went from, by the way, risk-wise, with going from the market to cash, from very low risk, about 40% of the market, to 150% of the market, a very high volatility, including the short side. So for my money, and I hope for yours, that if you do take a newsletter, you won't rely on the short side. So it appears the short side doesn't add value. It appears, by the way, the people who think they're taking a very low risk strategy, there's one newsletter that has what the portfolio is actually called, the SAFE portfolio. It has, for 10 years, not 15, lost 1.2% a year. So I know that names don't lead to results. I know that short side doesn't lead to results. I don't have any evidence that options lead to results. I don't have any evidence that using newsletters that find the names, the companies, identify the companies with great growth prospects. I don't see anything that suggests that there's a big advantage there. I certainly don't find an advantage for taking high risk. In fact, the low to very low risk did better than the high risk by a substantial amount. And I don't find any advantage of value. I did the Prudent Speculator. There's a newsletter, interesting newsletter. Combines value investing with and leverage with individual stock picking. Well, what do we know about value as an asset class? Well, it did a lot better, certainly, than the S&P 500 did over the last 15 years. And if you added some leverage to the portfolio, then you even did better. So I do see some advantage to leverage potentially, but again, you're taking a lot more risk. On the other hand, I can't seem to find any value for the people who try to market time the RIDEX and Pro Funds, mutual funds, and newsletters that profess to be able to know how to do that and make you more money. There's just no evidence. The only real evidence I came away with that I think is helpful, and I've already talked about it, so I'll just mention this one more time quickly. Index funds, diversified portfolios of index funds. You could have picked any of the four major newsletters that recommend index funds over that 15 years. In every case, you would have done just fine. So I'm sad. I'm really saddened that Mark Hulbert's work will no longer be available to protect people. That's what information is there to do in the investment community, is to protect people and help people, protect people from what's bad, help people find what's good. Mark Hulbert, probably, I don't know what the end result was in terms of the impact on individual investors. I suspect a lot of them gravitated towards the more conservative portfolios and indexing. I think I have no idea how many people use my portfolios, but I suspect the other suppliers like Moneyletter and Dan Wiener's newsletter and Money and Sound Mind Investing. I suspect that between the four organizations, we probably have at least 200, maybe to 300,000 subscribers that are following our work. But the work of any of the four of us looks to me to be better than almost all of the other newsletters. I don't think I mentioned market timing. I guess because I am a great believer in mechanical market timing. But not for people who aren't going to maintain the discipline. They make that very clear. It is interesting to see that some timing systems did okay. Some did poorly. In fact, as I mentioned in my article about Hulbert results, the fellow who really started the market timing fund exchange privilege kind of timing, where you could move from an equity fund to a money market fund. That was Dick Fabian's Telephone Switch newsletter became the granddaddy. And he had a decent track record. I think probably he was doing fine until he got out a day late after the crash in 1987. Always the risk that you might not get out in time, even with a timing newsletter. But I'm sure that they've been working just as hard at the Fabian organization since Dick is no longer there. But over the last 15 years, that newsletter, the whole idea is to get low risk returns, has compounded at, I think it's 0.1% a year for 15 years. So it has not been a star performer. And his heart, Doug Fabian's heart is he wants success for his newsletter readers, just like Value Line wants success, and Standard & Poor wants success, and Elliott Wave, they all want success. Your question is always going to be, where is there a way to invest? How should I invest that the probability of success is on my side? And everything I see in the work of Hulbert Financial Digest indicates that if you're doing the index approach, you're on the right path. Warren Buffett believes it too. Nobel Prize winners believe it too. And if you're not quite there yet, let me suggest I'm going to make a presentation in about 10 days to a committee of the finance committee of a large charitable organization. And I'm going to give each person in that committee a free copy of The Little Book of Common Sense Investing. That was written several years ago, but it's still valid information today, written by John Bogle. I heartily recommend, if you're on the fence, not quite sure whether those index funds are all they're cracked up to be, I suggest that you read John Bogle's book. And then if you want to get a little more sophisticated, take the next step and figure out how to put those index funds to work to squeeze out more profit without taking a lot more risk, maybe no more risk, that's where I want you to go, to my website and look at my Vanguard, both ETF and mutual fund portfolios. Well, this has been a long one, but I'm sorry again that Mark Hulbert is no longer going to be offering this wonderful service. I'd love to hear your questions about the newsletter industry if you have them. By the way, if you got a question about the newsletter industry, I'm going to suggest you just send it to Paul at paulmerriman.com, because I'll put together a another future a podcast on this topic. Thank you very much for listening.
That was Paul Merriman with Sound Investing. Sound Investing, soundinvesting.com, and paulmerriman.com are produced and exclusively owned by Paul Merriman, who is solely responsible for their content. For more information, free articles, mutual fund recommendations, and more, visit paulmerriman.com.